Free Talk Live.
This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. You can check out Liberty Conspiracy Live every Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter/X at Guard Goldsmith. And of course, find the show after the fact anytime at Rumble and Rockfin. What's on tap, one and all? What is on tap? Well, guess what? We are going to be starting with a pretty intense little theme coming from none other than O.O. Very good, very good, Ozzy. Yes, Ozzy, Ozzy Osbourne. He is the man in the moon. You know what's pretty cool about that is when I first heard that song, I didn't realize the production on that song is really good. And there's this really cool chord of sort of phaser keyboard thing that comes in and out sometimes. It's like this wow. So you not only have that hard rocking thing, you get that sort of weird sort of extra weirdness of the keyboards that go in there. So good job, Ozzy. And of course, Randy Rhoads, God rest his soul, Randy Rhoads. What a terrible story for him. You know, he wasn't a troubled guy or anything like that, but this accident that killed him with the plane, just so sad, so sad. Well, everybody, for this, let's turn to MRC TV. And one of the pieces I got to write over the weekend, it is, of course, you got it, my friends, the eclipse. Politicians everywhere are declaring emergencies for the moon passing before the sun. Yeah, I know. It's just so freaked out. Now, there are a number of arguments and rationales that people have presented about this. So let's do this. Let's turn to the video that we made for it. This is on YouTube. I wonder if there'll be a commercial because I've already lined up the other video. I've already got it set up. Let's just go with the Rumble version, huh? Let's just give Rumble more traffic because they're awesome. Here we go. Check it out, y'all. And by the way, this is an edited version. I just don't want to disappoint you, but I'll give you this section that was edited out. And I know, very exciting stuff, the inner workings of MRC TV. And I think you'll enjoy this because you might have noticed some of the same things I did, and maybe you wanted to do a video on this as well. Leave your comments inside Rockfin X or Rumble. Metaphors. Well, the potential metaphors and analogies are as limitless as the cosmos, but the sun god power assumptions taken by numerous state and county level politicians in preparation for the great solar eclipse not only reveal true stellar conceit, they shine light on the ridiculous and unconstitutional aid money grab, always tied to declarations of emergency and disaster. They also reveal a deeply troubling fact about how many politicians seem to think it's the role of government to act as mother hen, because government has, of course, slid into so many aspects of what should be private, consensual affairs and assessments. Hi, everyone. I'm Gardner Goldsmith for MRC TV. You know, along the path of the full solar eclipse, American political parasites are taking advantage of that momentary darkness in the sky. In Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican, wink, wink, a man who seemed to see no lockdown or tax-funded enticement that he didn't like, well, he's announced from Mount Olympus, a.k.a. the governor's office, that he's declared a state of emergency to, as he says, ensure that everyone has a great day. In Arkansas, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, a Republican, has declared a state of emergency until April 10th, ordering the Response and Recovery Fund to give her Division of Emergency Management $100,000
because we want to make sure Arkansans and all visitors have an enjoyable experience and come back again and again. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, a Republican, March 26th issued a similar state of emergency that will last through 11:59 p.m. on April 9th. And numerous other politicians and even judges in Texas counties and cities have done the same. Sure is nice to see how kind they want to be to tourists, given that, as if in chorus, these politically powered players declare the influx of hundreds of thousands of eclipse watchers as an unusual occurrence that could require more policing on roads, managing of traffic, and visits to their tax-funded parks. But that presents a long-standing philosophical question that many contemporary Americans often avoid. It's the question of whether politicians or anyone can assume for others that they can take their money and spend it on things those citizens, if left free, might not have chosen. The immorality of taking the cash is actually the stopping point. But if one would like to explore the matter along other vectors, one can lay out the vast array of so-called public services so many Americans now assume are part of the political world, and then ask whether the so-called services are something that can be or were provided by the private market. Certainly, privately owned theme parks see tens of thousands or perhaps hundreds of thousands of people visiting every day or every few days. Music festivals see the same. They have no right to demand payments for security from people across the state, people who never attend these events or never ask for entrance into the parks. Practically, in fact, if you look at it, the idea of scalability and management then come into play. Private market incentives for recognizing costs and benefits always reveal what levels of manpower and other resources are beneficial for private gatherings, but government assumptions of those responsibilities smother the cost-benefit signals. In fact, because government actions don't rely on voluntary participation for payment, they logically cannot be claimed to promote any real benefit. If people are forced to pay, then their power to judge quality is canceled by the state. Many people don't want to be roped into this event, this eclipse event. They shouldn't have to pay for others to have an enjoyable experience. And by making them pay, the state removes any way to measure the efficacy of its crowd management / policing system. Does the government spend too much on that? Too little on that? You can't ask those questions or withhold your money when the politicians assume that they can take it from you for any reason, including what they call an emergency. But of course, it actually goes deeper, because many people might argue that the state has to manage roads. So they might think that an influx of tourists on the government-run roads throws a magic switch such that the government must tax everyone to handle the new circumstances on those roads. But not everyone uses the roads, nor does everyone use the roads to the same degree or for similar purposes. And to assume that government in America historically always has built and run the roads is tragically erroneous. As Thomas DiLorenzo noted in his book, How Capitalism Saved America, and as I've noted here for MRC TV, in both Europe and America, roads were started and managed privately long, long before government got involved, started taking land via eminent domain, then mismanaging the roads, even as it sent police onto them to pretend they could breach the Fourth Amendment and search our cars without warrants. This is all factual on the ground history, to offer a mild pun, and history already has answered the question of whether private parties can and will build pathways on which people can travel to reach others. If government were the only thing that could facilitate our interest in traveling to visit others or visit stores, how in the world could stores have made access lanes and parking lots? How could they have managed them without taxing people and do better jobs at maintenance than government? That's valuable grist for the mental mill. But one more item might give us some perspective on this fraudulent emergency fad casting its shadow on so many halls of government. It's what you might have guessed, everybody. By declaring these emergencies, the politicians, yeah, they get to siphon cash away from people in other states via, of course, unconstitutional federal so-called aid. As Kaylee Gleason reports for Forbes, quote, state of emergency declarations can trigger several potential means of assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, including individual assistance for small businesses and households, as well as public assistance programs for road systems, public facilities, and other emergency protective measures. On county and city levels, such declarations allow local officials to get assistance from state emergency management agencies, but local and state governments can directly request assistance from the federal government if needed, including asking the president to declare a major disaster, according to FEMA. Another eclipse of the U.S. Constitution. It's another opportunity for some to live at the expense of others. Perhaps when the light returns, some of the mother hens and paternalists in politics can read the Constitution under that light. Perhaps they can look at history and stop this kind of parasitic behavior. It's doubtful, but perhaps a widespread recognition of ethics and the golden rule might arise before the next emergency eclipse. Thank you so much for watching, everyone. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Rumble where they don't censor us. Thank you again, Rumble team. Really appreciate it.
And thank you to the MRC TV team. Again, you know, it's amazing how quickly they work. They do such great jobs pulling out the edits from my hyperlinks, putting the pictures up there and so on. It's just fantastic. And I really appreciate Eric Shiner, who is the director of MRC TV, Brittany Hughes, who is the editor, the managing editor for the printed stuff, and all the people who do really good work on the video editing side and everything. So thanks. I hope you thought that was a good presentation. And maybe you noticed a few things going on with the eclipse. If you got a chance to check it out, you know, I have to mention, actually, before we go any further in the show, because we're growing by leaps and bounds, we have a new sponsor. It's true. We have a new sponsor, everybody. So right now, we have to open up the door and talk to our ad sponsor voice guy, part of our amazing team, part of the crew. That's why we have such high budgets here. And we got to talk to him to find out about our new sponsor. Everybody's coming in just showering us with cash. It's crazy. It's out of control. Let's find out. Are you there, new sponsor guy? Give us the word. We got somebody new.
That's right, Guard. We want to thank our new sponsor, the Declaration of Emergency During an Eclipse. Yes, you too can get lots of cash from taxpayers and future tax slaves if you just declare an emergency in your life, and you'll get the money. Keep it in mind, everybody. If you want advice on how to do it, go to declareemergencynow.org/FMDC. And when you get there, .edu, you can also apply for a special voucher so that when you pay for the class, Joe Biden will end up making taxpayers pay for your loan. Back to you, guys.
Now, thank you, advertising voice guy. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad you're working for us here, man. I know you have a lot of options, so thank you so much. We'll see you again next time, dude. Really appreciate it very, very much.
Not a problem, guard. I'm just going to make sure that I make my own money as I declare an emergency for virtually everything in my life. Oh, shoot. We're out of orange juice. Emergency! Emergency! Back to you, guard. By the way, I might not be working for you in the future because I'll just be declaring so many emergencies.
Wow. We're going to have to get another voice guy then. Shoot, that's kind of a bummer. Now, maybe we can get Corinne Jean-Pierre. She can be like our new spokesperson or whatever, you know? Hey, if you want a little something on what it looked like today, if you were not in the zone of the eclipse, it was actually pretty interesting. You know, I've been through a couple of these things and survived. I know, survived the apocalypse. But here's a little something from outside the G estate in lovely Amherst, named after that guy who almost convinced people to give the disease-ridden, diseased lice inside mats to the Native Americans back in the colonial days. Who's that guy? Here we are. This is me checking it out.
All right. So, thanks, Bree. Cool. Oh, right on. So, no problem. It's very gray out here. It has that thing up there in the sky. Gets.
Works well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Works well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying a lot of different things here.
Where are the real buses?
And there, folks, is the shot that I got as we were right on the edge of the full solar eclipse. We were right along the pathway. We're about a couple miles south from the pathway. So we got quite a show, and it did get really weird. It's a typical sort of, you know, like, the cloud, it's like, you know, you got a storm coming in or something like that. But it was a little bit different because a lot of the evening birds started to chirp. You could hear the whippoorwills going, and they usually come towards the end of the day. And so that was very interesting. And, you know, I've seen some of these things before, tried a bunch of different techniques. I used a little water pan thing with the reflection and so on, which was great, except we had a breeze today. So it was kind of weird. It was like something out of a 1960s flashback from like a Monkees episode, showing like, you know, Davy Jones looking down at a river or a stream, thinking about the girl he found in love that he loved. And there'd be like the reflection of the sunlight and the dappled leaves and so on the river. And then they'd go to like, you know, they'd blur it out and they'd do a dissolve to Davy and the girl running around, jumping, having a good time, you know. That sort of thing, you know, fighting, doing bullfighting, you know, the typical Davy Jones. Or actually, Davy Jones was quite an athletic guy. So it reminded me of that. Like, it would get sort of blurry, like you're going into a flashback, and then it would come back. But my sister got the glasses, which is super cool. And I guess you can call those Panglossian sunglasses. They give you the rose-colored image of the solar eclipse. But there it is, everybody. That's what allowed so many of the state politicians to get a bunch of cash. Yeah. Awesome. I don't know. I know. It's like, what? We got to do something about that thing up in the sky. It's going to freak everybody out. Yeah. But, however, if we could only have more of those eclipsi, then the anthropogenic global climate warming change problem that we all know is definitely real, it wouldn't be happening. We'd be all set. It's almost as if the solar power is what drives 1,500-year warming and cooling cycles. Quiet. Don't mention Fred Singer's book, Unstoppable Global Warming, every 1,500 years. Oh, I said it. I'm so sorry. And I'm an apostate. Let's find out a little bit, my friends, about the climate cult. Here they are.
But oh, it's too hot, lady. I gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. It's too hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger, what a mess we have made. So long ago, you were my love, oh my love.
Give me that smooth guitar. Yeah, baby. Excellent stuff. All right, get ready, everybody. As we mentioned in the billboard for tonight, John Kerry, we tried to tell him, don't let the door hit you on the way out there, John. Well, guess what? Not only is his daughter continuing to do the climate cult stuff with the WEF and stuff like that, as he leaves the climate czar's position and goes to work for the Biden administration,
getting Joe Biden reelected. Hello, John Kerry, reporting for duty.
Thank you, John. You're so cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Don't call me Lurch.
He is actually giving us the finger as we try to kick him out the door. Well, as he leaves voluntarily. Here it is, folks. Tribune News Service reports John Kerry, we've been waiting for this, shows naked contempt in final refusal to share climate office identities. Now, various Congress people have been looking for this information for ever since he started and at the climate czar, you know, highly constitutional position that you're paying for and for which you're paying and many other people are paying. But this story, if it comes from Boston, you know, the story has got to be a really pro-liberty story. So here it is. Dateline Boston. Oh, let's go to our newsreel footage guy. Hey, because, you know, we have a really big staff. So I know I try to do a really good impression of him. But here he is, newsreel footage guy coming in from the 1930s and 40s. Are you there? Have you come through the wormhole? Are you there? Newsreel guy, are you there? I'm here, Gardner. I am here to give you the story. John Kerry shows naked contempt. Ooh la la. We better get the Motion Picture Artists Association on top of that one. In final refusal to share climate office identities. Rated X. Dateline Boston. Outgoing climate jet setter John Hero Kerry is again showing his naked contempt for transparency by refusing to reveal his staff in an office that has operated in the dark since its inception. Yes, good movie. Kerry is now being moved to President Joe Biden's campaign committee with longtime Democrat strategist John Podesta replacing him. Oh, joy, Skippy peanut butter. I love it. We'll be back with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, check out the show live every Monday through Friday on Rumble and Rockfin and my Twitter /X at Gard Goldsmith. Be part of the conspiracy for freedom, because, of course, freedom is out of fashion nowadays.
Protection. Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster, holy stink.
It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Welcome to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, the founder of The Liberty Conspiracy, which can be heard live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, running for at least an hour and a half. We stream at Rumble, Rockman, and on my Twitter /X account, at Gard Goldsmith. That's G-A-R-D Goldsmith. You can also find some of our material on YouTube and some of it on BitChute as well. And you can visit my Substack, which is the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. And every Sunday, check out the Sunday News Assembly, which contains 20 stories at least that pertain to liberty, plus contextual information that will help draw out of those breaking stories long-term lessons that you can pass on to others and future generations. Hey, remember how we discussed when we were looking at the billboard, the incredible power of Janet Yellen? It's almost like psychedelic. You know what I'm saying? It's like boosh, boosh, mind-blowing stuff. Well, I don't know if she physically traveled to China. Remains to be seen. Might have been AI, AI-generated Yellen. You know, she's kind of compact. Probably doesn't take a lot of memory to, you know, work on an AI Yellen image, right? or to actually mimic her thought processes. Probably very easy to do that. Even with some of the most basic computer technology, you could probably mimic pretty much everything that she would think of. However, Janet Yellen, talking about businesses and the economy, she wasn't promoting EVs. She was promoting the idea of making it more expensive for you to live. And here it is. And this is one of those great options for a guy who works for MRC TV to be able to turn to the editor to say, hey, would you like an article about how poorly this was written, even by Fox News? Well, here it is. Here's the headline from Fox News. Yellen says tough conversations needed on China's overproduction. We often hear this. We often hear from protectionists out there say, they're dumping, you know, sort of an invasion of the body snatchers twist, right? They're coming. What's coming? The cheap products that people could buy and save money with. Wait, what? Yeah, we got to stop them. How are you going to do it? Aggression. The government. Why? We have to protect the other people who are going to cost the consumers more. Wait, but they're the visible people. They're the ones we can see. They're the ones who can lobby government and get us into another mode of tariffs that will pick essential and non-essential. Yeah, but didn't you not like essential? No, wait, you don't understand. This is my choice of essential, non-essential, not the other choice from the lockdowns. This is completely different. Doesn't sound different to me. No, it is. You're not listening to me. I am listening to you. I think we're hearing different things and using a lot of logical assumptions that are not logical in any way. In fact, they're Aristotelian frauds, as Aristotle might bring up. Yeah. Well, yeah, here's the story. Here is Janet Yellen. She says there are tough conversations needed on China's overproduction. And you can see even Fox is pushing it. Yellen is the quintessential China dove. She's not pushing hard enough against those evil, cheap Chinese products. I tell you what, Janet, you know what you could do? We can pull a Harrison Bergeron. What'll be really, really great, we'll get everybody employed. We just cut off a person, every other person, we cut off their arm. Or we add sandbags to them. It will increase the burden to get stuff done, and that'll employ everybody. It'll be awesome. I know it'll be more expensive to get stuff. We won't be able to produce as much. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, in a real economy where the monetary system is free, not attached to the state, the monetary system would retain its value and productivity would see more produced for less money. So you would actually be able to get more for your money. Prices would go down. That's right. And so people would end up saving, knowing that if they put off a purchase now, they might be able to get even more of it later up to a certain point because, of course, people have their own preferences. But that saved money would then be in a bank and, again, lent out to prospective business people who can employ more people. Productivity leads to surplus. The surplus can then be showered on new people that we never could have showered that surplus on to leave a preposition dangling. And you get new opportunities. As Frederick Bastiat would say in the broken window parable, that we never would have known about unless we allow somebody to save some cash and we don't break their windows on them, which is exactly what Janet Yellen wants to do to you to stop you from buying imports, whether it's from China or anywhere else. Let's check it out. Here's more of the story. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said Sunday during her trip to Beijing, I'm sure that was very useful use of your money, don't you think? That the U.S. and China have a duty to manage the complex relationship between the countries' responsibility and raised concerns about the impact. And she raised concerns. There should be a comma there. And she raised concerns about the impact of Chinese firms. I love that classic. It's overproduction. Well, you know how it's overproduction? You find out whether the firm is maintaining its profitability or it ends up adjusting to cut back. Then you know that they were overproducing and demand wasn't high enough. Overproduction is a term that private firms use when they say, you know what? we're producing too much. We're getting a decrease. We're seeing a decrease in demand. We've got to slow down our production. We're going to cut back. Right? That's the market. It responds to incentives from free-minded people, people who have free will, who don't have to have their money showered on a good day for the people who want to sightsee for the eclipse. Let's take people's money for people to manage the roads. I'd rather spend my money on something else. Thank you. No, you can't. We'll choose for you. Well, real value can be shown by real people, not the government. And so Yellen doesn't get it. Yellen met with Chinese Premier Li Qiang, the number two official in the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, of course. That, of course, standing for climate control policies, behind General Secretary Xi Jinping for 80 minutes. Well, that's just perfect. In Beijing on Sunday, and Li said the U.S. and China should be partners rather than advisors, and touted the constructive progress made during her trip. Yellen's trip to China is her second in the last 9 months. Do you think she was bowing and bowing and bowing like one of those ducks? Those little duck things that goes back and forth into the water. While we have more to do, I believe that over the past year, we have put our bilateral relationship on more stable footing, Yellen said. This has not meant ignoring our differences or avoiding tough conversations. It has meant understanding that we can only make progress if we directly or openly communicate with one another. You know what's interesting? You know when you go to the store, and it's like, you know, it's you and the person selling you the thing. What's funny is you don't have the buying buddy who's constantly at your side. You know, I've mentioned this to students, and I put it in writing as well. A lot of people think of the government as their buying buddy, right? So the government is going to be able to, force a company to sell something for less. Or when they hire you, they're going to have to hire you at a certain rate, right? Well, the consumer is the final hirer, the final employer. So imagine you're the consumer, and all of a sudden the buying buddy you've had going around, you know, making sure that your salary was up above a certain level, otherwise you couldn't be employed, wink, wink, get it, minimum wage. But, you know, threatening the employer, thus threatening the consumer, the final employer. Imagine if the buying buddy suddenly manifested the aggression a little bit more overtly. And as you went around to stores, previously he was getting you good deals, forcing the companies to lower their prices, that sort of thing, right? That sort of stuff. To include stuff that maybe they didn't want to include, like an insurance company having to cover X, Y, or Z because the government tells them to. The politicians say, you've got to do this, rather than the politicians opening up their own insurance companies and doing that. That sort of stuff, right? The airbags in cars for your safety rather than giving the producers and the consumers choices about what to buy and sell, that sort of thing. Imagine if he turned on you more manifestly and said, oh, no, you got to pay that guy more as you went to buy something. Well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Would you like to have the buying buddy around at that point? I don't think so. Well, that's what they actually do with minimum wage laws, but most consumers don't notice that. They think it's only being applied to the evil, exploitative employer. You're going to have to pay more for that service from that employee. Well, I might do it myself then. I won't employ that person. Oh, wait, what? We're getting higher unemployment. You are? That's weird. I know, and they're low-skilled people. Really? I could never have imagined. That's crazy. I'd like to buy that product from China. Nope. You're going to have to pay more for that. Well, yeah, but, you know, I could employ that low-skilled. No. We've already made sure that low-skilled person's unemployed. See, it's the way that goes, because everybody's got to turn to us for the answers of the problems that we've already created through diktats of politicians in the state. It's awesome. Keep turning to the state. It works really well. So, of course, they are haranguing and arguing. And, yes, the Constitution does give the federal government the power to impose tariffs on incoming goods and impose excise taxes on goods made in the United States. And that's led to all sorts of wonderfulness. Like, oh, one of the big drivers of the Great Depression, that would be one of the big, big tariffs, Smoot-Hawley. Then you've got, of course, the Whiskey Rebellion with the excise tax on whiskey. for people in Western Pennsylvania, Ohio, places like that. They had a real good time trying to pay that. It's awesome. That's awesome. Oh, and by the way, when it comes to saving some money and freedom of association, as Jacob Hornberger and I got to discuss, in a peaceful world, I don't have a right to say I am going to prevent my neighbor from hiring someone, having dinner with someone, dating someone, having a conversation with someone, right? Whether it's someone down the street or someone from another state or someone from another country, right? Janet Yellen trying to put up potential blocks or threats about Chinese products that will cost you more. Same thing as stopping that foreign worker who might be in the nation state overseas from coming to the United States to provide the services on the soil of the United States. Again, if you think you're a constitutionalist, if you'd like to think that you're comfortable with what the founders wrote and you think that that is a good document for the operational system called the United States of America government, therefore, as a result, I would hope that you would recognize that immigration, the word, is not in the Constitution and it's left up to the states. But beyond that, as I've mentioned, economically, logically, and philosophically, it is impossible to claim that any border barrier that the government puts up actually is indicative of where anyone wants a border. Only with private property and private decisions made with free will, as we saw in the video about the roads and things like that, only when private individuals have free will to express something, can they actually express their values. So what we see, of course, is that when the government says, well, you value American jobs here that are currently existent that will cost more than for a product than if you were to buy the product over there, and you also don't value the other work that could be created if you were allowed to save the money and buy the foreign product, we've got to protect those current jobs. They never can change. We never can come up with an invention that might put them out of work. We never can come up with the inclined plane that might put the second guy who lifts something out of work. In other words, allow one guy to do the work of two people to be more efficient and then freeing up that new guy to do new things that could help people and experiment and discover new things. No, you must toil. You must toil. In fact, we're going to add to your labor, cut off your arm, pull a Harrison Bergeron and add sandbags to everybody. That's what we're going to do. So whether they do it through policy on international fronts or through immigration blockages, none of it is moral. None of it is right. The idea of political borders is unsupportable logically and constitutionally. It's supposed to be left up to the state levels. But let's get into the immigration story, everybody. And for that, I want to turn to, am I going to go with Immigrant Song from Zeppelin? I watched some Robert Plant last night. No. Gonna go with Wall of Voodoo, my friends. Yeah, Stan Ridgway, baby. Oh, man. How many of you were around when this song came out? I was 1 year old. Can I just say just what does he say? I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican radio. Yeah, I was 1 year old when this song came out, and I recorded it on cassette from radio station WBCN right after I threw my Vietnam medals over the wall. And I then later said that I just threw the ribbons. You know, it's all completely truthful right here at Liberty Conspiracy. So, no, I was, I don't remember how old I was, like 12 or something when that song came out. Great song. Love that song. Great tune. Here it is, everybody. And now we can make a nice reference to the Rolling Stones. New York City dissolves right to shelter. Right to shelter. Give me shelter rules, leaving illegal migrants stranded. Now, this is another great example of the rotten journalism behind this. Notice as you go through this, everybody. Now, let me ask you if your mind is like mine on, you know, when you read articles oftentimes. So generally speaking, when I'm reading an article, I see the headline like that, and I say, okay, this is a political move. Somebody made a decision. Who was it? Was it done through legal means, through the jury, through the jurisprudential means, through the courts? Or was it done through a change in policy from someone or what, right? What's going on here, right? Well, of course, as often happens in the political world, the active voice wasn't applied, to use the passive voice. The writer did not apply the active voice for a long, long time, or actually cite how this happened. After multiple paragraphs, you got to read, and then you finally discover what you figured was the case. It's New York City Mayor Eric Adams making a decision that seems to run contrary to his previous decision about handing people the $10,000 debit cards, claiming that sanctuary city status was awesome, and of course, completely buying into the welfare state as he has for a long time. Here's the story. It comes to us via GistFest, and I don't know who wrote it, but here it is. After 42 years, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the right which made the lives of thousands easier in New York City ended. It's a right. Okay, there's red flag number one. Buck number one, as the formerly funny Bill Cosby would have done. Or as Family Feud would say, strike number one, the right to shelter policy. It's a right to shelter, which ensured same day housing for those who were eligible for it, was terminated. It was terminated. See, passive voice, not active voice. It was terminated. It just happened. It was killed. I don't know who killed it. It just got killed. I don't know how it happened. This must have been some zeitgeist or something. I have no idea. Maybe it was targeted by IDF. It got killed. So far, over 180,000 individuals sought asylum in New York City alone. 180,000 individuals since when? Since the start of it? Seems like a low number. Previously, these individuals were guaranteed shelter. Oh, so it's not since the start of it. You give us no time frame, right? So again, bad reporting. Previously, these individuals were guaranteed shelter, but now they are left stranded facing uncertainty and hardships. So look, the number is not really relevant to the story of the policy change. So let's just get to who made the decision and whether or not it's permanent. The termination of the policy has left many without a place to live. This is deeply impacted. Ah, that's great. Yeah, you're very sophisticated, aren't you? Those facing hardships through migration and settling into a new place. You know, migration that was facilitated by the feds thanks to the central command and control collectivist system of migration control from Washington. Yes, conservatives, you're getting exactly what you wanted. Not exactly, but it's central control. Enjoy trying to control that. The sudden end to the right to shelter policy led to many migrants opting for numerous survival tactics that are dangerous or nearly impossible to achieve. Many migrants resort to makeshift shelters, Rolling Stones. They sleep in trains, streets, or public restrooms. Some of them even perform trapeze acts. I know. It's like, what? What? They are now forced to endure harsh conditions. Somewhere multiple layers. Again, this is the this is the fifth paragraph of this piece. So we go on and on and on and on. They stay in shelters, but they can't stay in shelters. It's, you know, very emotional, of course. You got to go with the emotions. And we go further into the sixth paragraph. Critics argue that this change may exacerbate the cycle of homelessness. Then we go into the seventh paragraph. Reports about instances of illegal apartments, overcrowding, and desperate measures taken by migrants. Reports include, these conditions have underscored systemic failures and societal inequalities, further heightened by the changes in shelter policies. They're societal inequalities. You know, when you move someplace and you've got no money, it's somebody else's fault. It's society. Society made me what I am, repo man. NYC, once known as a sanctuary city providing shelter and aid to those in need, now faces scrutiny over its new policies. Evil New York. Go ahead, bite the Big Apple. And that is the eighth paragraph. Then we go to the ninth paragraph. New York City is grappling with legal complexities until we reach the tenth paragraph. Here it is. Two-thirds of the way through the article, you actually find out why the change occurred, to use the passive voice. Who changed things? Why it was, of course, right there, New York City Mayor Eric Adams justified ending the so-called right to shelter by citing unsustainable costs and strained resources. You mean you didn't get enough from the government from Washington? He noted that budget cuts affect those experiencing homelessness and essential services. There you go. That is just phenomenal, huh? Well, as a little addendum, I want to do two things. Moving from the immigration story into the war story, I want to turn to a great book and an excellent writer, Writer for Freedom, a great guy, formerly the head of the Freeman magazine, Sheldon Richmond, and his Free Association blog. And his Thank Goodness It's Friday, or Thank Goodness It's Freedom, piece from April 5th. Because this tells us a little bit more about some of the funky things people do when they look at the migration story. And it folds into that cover you see right there of his book, Coming to Palestine, which is a terrific book. I've had it for a number of years, put out by the Libertarian Institute, as Sheldon went to Palestine and discovered years ago just how bad things were for so many of the people there living under the yoke of the Israeli government. He wrote on Friday in a title, a piece titled Static Analysis, Clouds Immigration Debate, quote, or I'm just reading it. Opponents of people's freedom to cross national borders to where the best jobs are, aka open borders, make a rookie error. They engage in static analysis and overlook the dynamism of social processes that freedom produces. There's plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find us every Monday through Friday on Rockfin, Rumble, and Twitter starting 6 p.m. Eastern Time, live. Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash with BitRefill.com, where you can buy gift cards from big retailers, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Thanks to Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
We return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X at Guard Goldsmith. We start at 6 o'clock Eastern U.S. time. Moving from the immigration story into the war story, I want to turn to a great book and an excellent writer, Writer for Freedom, a great guy, formerly the head of the Freeman magazine, Sheldon Richmond, and his Free Association blog, and his Thank Goodness It's Friday, or Thank Goodness It's Freedom, piece from April 5th. Because this tells us a little bit more about some of the funky things people do when they look at the migration story, and it folds into that cover you see right there of his book, Coming to Palestine, which is a terrific book. I've had it for a number of years, put out by the Libertarian Institute, as Sheldon went to Palestine and discovered years ago just how bad things were for so many of the people there living under the yoke of the Israeli government. He wrote on Friday in a title, a piece titled Static Analysis, Clouds Immigration Debate, quote, or I'm just reading it. Opponents of people's freedom to cross national borders to where the best jobs are, a.k.a. open borders, make a rookie error. They engage in static analysis and overlook the dynamism of social processes that freedom produces. This is one of the things, as I mentioned to Jacob Hornberger, that I wanted to investigate to find out whether or not during times of great immigration, so-called legal immigration in the United States, the already established native workers suddenly experienced massive periods of unemployment. They did not. In fact, employment rose, and so did productivity, thanks to the new decrease in the expense for labor, and that savings could then be applied to starting up new jobs and new capacities. The consumers were able to save something. Again, why don't we just make one person do all the work of that two people could do, or two people do all the work that one person can do with a machine? Sorry. So, writes Sheldon, he says, I was recently asked on Facebook, are you enjoying Biden open borders? Biden's open borders? There's the mistake right there. People who ask that question look at a bad situation, say the mess at the southern border. Imagine one policy change, namely the removal of restrictions on movement, and they stop there. It's as if that policy shift would prompt no changes in how people, including Americans, behave. Because of their static analysis, the opponents of freedom foresee disaster. But hold on. That's like assuming that a significant change in the tax laws in either direction wouldn't prompt significant changes in people's tax-related behavior. It assumes that at least some people are not purposeful beings and do not respond to incentives and disincentives. But we know otherwise. For example, since World War II, federal taxes collected have been a fairly consistent percentage of GDP, regardless of the changes in the tax rates. Why would that be? Well, you know why. People respond to incentives and disincentives, elementary to the economic way of thinking. Pointing out this error is one of the first things a market advocate would tell an interlocutor who committed the error. Frederick Bastiat's wonderful What is Seen and Not Seen, the parable of the broken window, taught the lesson in reverse. He showed that an obstacle, a broken window, prevented a shopkeeper from acting as he would have acted, but for the need to overcome the new obstacle, that is, the need to buy a new window. He couldn't use the money to buy books, shoes, or something else. Those who focus on how societies full of actual people work understand this. You can't leave human action out of the picture. In the real world, decriminalizing foreign workers' freedom to move would represent profit opportunities, not only for aspiring immigrants, but also for entrepreneurial Americans. Yet the opponents only consider what foreigners would do. How could they have forgotten the Americans? What? They don't like profit? Americans don't like profit? The southern border is indeed a mess. Many people are assembling there, many of whom are evading the government officers. And he says, yay. And sneaking in or entering with provisional approval or helpless acquiescence. The government seems overwhelmed. And I will add the government is helping in many cases. Some governors have cynically shipped the newcomers to other states without their consent, using them cynically as pawns. Shame. Everyone can agree that something has to change. Freedom of movement advocates say the solution is to remove all the restrictions, not just restrictions on entry, but all the restrictions on what people can do once they cross the border. Here's the point. That requires eliminating all the rules on how Americans may deal with the newcomers. Right now, it's illegal to hire and rent to border crossers who lack the, quote, right government papers. As Chandran Kutathis eloquently reminds us, the government cannot limit the freedom of outsiders without also limiting the freedom of insiders. How easily that is overlooked. So, so-called open borders mean more than the mere literal dropping of entry restrictions. Laws against American conduct would also necessarily be repealed. Commercial relations between Americans and newcomers would be decriminalized. Immigrants come here to work, to make better lives, and to send money home to their families. Well, unfortunately, of course, there's the incentive for the welfare state, and it's been magnified recently with tons and tons of handouts in various states and on the federal level. Sheldon writes, they need jobs, housing, medical insurance, and other goods and services. Decriminalization on both sides of the ledger would replace the hazardous black market with all its dangers and exploitation and worse, with a transparent legal market for labor, tenants, and consumers. Decriminalization, in other words, would invite entrepreneurs to form businesses designed to match newcomers with employers, landlords, etc. Entrepreneurship. Job and housing brokers or exchanges would set up shop near the border to offer their services. Other firms might offer transportation to private employment and housing centers. The possibilities are endless. They would be even better if the myriad destructive housing restrictions were repealed. No one can say how exactly it will look because entrepreneurship consists of discovery. That is its genius. This open market, by the way, would function as an invitation to workers who want to multiply their incomes 2 to 15 times through increased productivity. That's what happens when people are free to move from poor, low productivity to rich, high productivity countries. It is win-win, as free exchange always is. People don't exchange unless they think they're going to improve their status. There's no excuse for static analysis when it comes to immigration. Dynamic market analysis is not some new thing. It's one of the first points that free market advocates draw attention to. Unfortunately, even some smart pro-market people overlook dynamism and say dumb things. For example, Thomas Sowell once said, "You can't let everyone come to America because if everyone came to America, it wouldn't be America anymore." Well, just a couple points, of course, that are mixed in with that from Sheldon Richman and his Friday blog. I just want to mention, of course, that big consideration here has to be given to the incentives that government gives to people to come in who don't want to work, right? Who are just coming because they're getting funded to come here. In many cases, they've asked people at the border, why are you coming? They don't even know why they're coming. They've just been paid to come. Cartels, drug cartels, international organizations connected to the UN. It's a weird situation. They cross the border, then they get picked up by the central command and control system and dropped off at other subunits of the command and control system, like New York City or Massachusetts, Logan Airport, and they get subsidized there. Howie Carr put together an entire list of all the different things that these people get. They even get dry cleaning services done. He posted a picture of that, I think it was Saturday or Friday, of the dry cleaning packages in the plastic bags. So those incentives, people hear about those things. Now, whether they think long term and what's going to happen if that dries up, I don't know. But that is a major, major factor. And maybe one of the other factors that goes through your mind if you're worried about the immigration problem is, well, yeah, I understand that putting blocks between freedom of association is immoral. It's wrong. But we have all these problems that pop up. We can't allow for just unlimited immigration. Well, as we know, markets allow for attenuation for that. People might say there's not enough land. They'll build. They'll, you know, new migrants, they'll constantly build and so on. Well, think about this. Would that apply to you, to your family, if they were going to be moving here decades ago, centuries ago? Should they have been prevented from moving here for the expansion? You know, I understand the sentimental quality of, well, I think this area is being overbuilt. I think this area, but at almost every turn, we find that either trying to stop it engages our own form of conceit, or that we see that within the system of the land and the zoning, there already are political forces that are at work either to incentivize or disincentivize certain things, whether it's zoning for businesses or zoning for housing. There's going to be an increase in the cost for housing. Not if you allow people to build more houses. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think aesthetically that looks so good. Well, then where are you going to apply that as other people tell you you can't do something, right? So this is one of the major problems here that we see from people, I think, looking at immigration, thinking that there are X, Y, or Z problems, and then not addressing their own hubris in saying, well, yeah, then maybe they should recognize that their own preferences are now being applied to other stretches of land, where if they were the ones to move there, maybe they'd give themselves an exception. Where's the cutoff point? They say, well, violence, crime. Well, then we start mixing in, of course, the extra costs that are incurred because of the political system. Right. If you had a real private property system, it would attenuate based on the costs of accepting people, based on the need for new housing, then certain resources would be moved over to building. And at a certain point, you would see decreases in the migration as the opportunities might level out. And the costs for moving, if people actually incurred their own costs rather than being subsidized by the government, those costs for moving, housing would become more scarce. There might not be the land that's available because it has to go towards other uses, which people are recognizing as more valuable. That becomes difficult. And so these people can't afford it anymore. So no longer are they going to be coming in to do that. Again, you could get all sorts of options. You could get sponsors for apprenticeships and a lot of different types of things. But you're not going to see these market options arise. You're not going to see the way that people want land to be allocated, the way the market would want, the way the consumers might want to get something for less, having lower labor costs, but at the same time, seeing that the influx of more people is now driving up the cost of housing and things like that. All of these things balance out without central planning. And in fact, central planning makes it worse because they bring in special favorites and they have special treats that they give to people. So Sheldon's argument, I think, could be amplified a little bit, especially with, you know, very good, deep consideration to people recognizing the on the ground problems of government incentivizing people to move. That's not part of his conversation there. I think it's really important to bring that in there. And of course, the fallacy that the government is going to do it the way you want it to do it. We've already seen it's not happening. It's not happening that way. And Donald Trump didn't really do it that way either. It's always been that way. You know, somebody is not going to be satisfied when the central government makes its plans. So it's just unfortunate. It's really too bad. Now, talking about the Coming to Palestine book, and, you know, maybe some people were satisfied with my reading of Sheldon's piece. Maybe they thought there was going to be more to that. So I hope I read it okay for you. Hopefully the amplification added a little bit as well. So if you are a big person who wants the borders protected by the central government, you might consider some of those things as well. But I want to turn now to the Palestine, Israeli, and Ukraine war situation. And for that, we need a theme. We got it right here.
Speak about destruction. Speak about destruction. This is the world destruction. Your life ain't nothing.
Oh, boy, do we have a lot to discuss now. This is great. A lot of tips of the hat to Kim Iverson, to Jimmy Dore, Grand Theft World. A lot of inspiration from all those folks. Excellent work. The Ron Paul report today. All right, everybody, let's go to it. Using TV and movies.
TV and movies, religions, of course. Yes, the world is painted for destruction. Is it nuclear war? What are you asking for?
hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me slowly. Hit me quick, but all right, everybody, let's get right to it. I've got a number of things lined up for you. I want to start off with a quick look at, first off, let's talk about Ukraine. Via antiwar.com, I was all over this website today. Dave DeCamp, April 7th, wrote this. Ukrainian drone hits the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. That would be the power plant that I mentioned on Friday that, of course, everybody says, after the Russians took it over, of course they bombed themselves, right? You know, after they took over the power plant in Ukraine, they also blew out the dam that was used for the reservoir that was useful for water to cool the nuclear stacks. Yeah, you know, because the Russians, they're self-hating Russians, as I mentioned. Very important, very important. Well, as we also saw, the IAEA went in to investigate. And even though the trajectory of the rockets that hit the Zaporizhia plant back last fall could easily, last summer, could easily be recognized, they're like, I don't know where these might have come from. I don't know. I don't know. And the Russians who were there were saying, why would we bomb ourselves? I don't know. I don't know. We're just from the IAEA. I don't know. Well, let us go home. We did our stuff here. Okay, thanks. Well, the Ukrainians did it again. On Sunday, a Ukrainian drone struck the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Oh, man. Haven't they seen the China syndrome? China. Yep. The plant's officials said there was no serious damage in the attack. It's located in southeastern Ukraine. It's been under Russian control since February of 2022. Rosatom, Russia's state nuclear agency, later said three people were wounded in the attack. Ah, isn't it great? The United States gave them the weapons to do that, probably. That's awesome. It's either the U.S., Germany, or U.K., but it was likely the U.S. The International Atomic Agency, Energy Agency, which has inspectors at the plant, confirmed the drone strike. IAEA experts confirmed physical impact of drone attacks by ZNPP today. Well, at least they acknowledged it this time. They wrote on X, IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi condemned the attack. Why, I was there this time. I didn't arrive after the fact. This is a clear violation of the basic principles, I don't know if he was there, of for protecting, but some were, for protecting Europe's largest NPP, nuclear power plant. Such reckless attacks significantly increase the risk of a major nuclear accident and must cease immediately. The Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is located in the town of Enerhodar on the south bank of the Dnieper River. Ukraine controls the territory across the river, and the plant has come under Ukrainian shelling throughout the war. Yep, absolutely. They've also launched several failed attempts to retake the plant. And, of course, yes, the last one was in October 2022 when 600 Ukrainian commandos tried to cross the river. The U.S. supported the raid by providing targeting data so Ukraine could use its U.S.-provided HIMARS rocket systems, which hit Russian positions on the southern bank of the river near the nuclear power plant. Well, I'm sure it was all for you, right? I do it all for you. Yep, it's like that Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Everything I do it for you. There you go, Ukrainian drone. And there's this one. Before we start to focus on Israel, U.S., Philippines, Japan, and Australia conduct first joint military exercise in the South China Sea. Yeah, I'm sure the Chinese people are really excited about that. The U.S., Japan, and Philippines, and Australia might conduct a joint military exercises in the South China Sea on Sunday in a provocative show of force aimed at China, writes Dave DeCamp. According to Japan's Kyoto News, the drills mark the first full-scale exercise between the four nations. The U.S. has been looking to increase military cooperation between its treaty allies in the region as part of its military buildup to prepare for a future war with China. Ah, the Red Rockers must be delighted. The four countries released a joint statement that made clear the drills were meant to push back on China's claims to the South China Sea. Okay, I think we can stop there. According to the South China Morning Post, we'll continue. The drills included two Philippine vessels, one American ship, one Aussie ship, and a Japanese ship, and focused on anti-submarine warfare training, tactical exercises, and photographic exercises. Man, they just don't give up, huh? Right? All right, well, let's give you a bit more information. All right, now, I want to show you a report about the follow-up. As we saw on the billboard, it looks like maybe the seasons are changing for Ukraine. Maybe, of course, the desperation is showing after the attack in Moscow. Maybe some politicians are starting to change their tune on Ukraine and on Israeli military supplies, even as the Speaker of the House continues to push for all of that. And as Joe Biden says, there's no change in U.S. support for Israel. This also by Dave DeCamp. I tell you, if I write three pieces in a day, that's pretty good. Dave DeCamp, I just read three pieces that he wrote yesterday while I was writing. He's amazing. His might be a little bit shorter, but that's pretty substantial for a Sunday. He's a hardworking dude. Here it is, everybody. Biden says Israel is doing what he asked, signaling that he is not going to change U.S. support. President Biden said on Friday that Israel was doing what he asked. What exactly are they doing? Are they really pulling out? No, they're not. They're not really pulling out in any way whatsoever. And he didn't exactly ask for them to pull out either. They did what he asked. What does that mean? It's open to interpretation, isn't it? You mean they slaughtered innocent people in a food convoy? Is that what they did that you asked them to do? Or slaughtering more innocent people that they just indiscriminately bomb using AI also? Is that what you've asked them to do? It's hard to figure out, Joe. There's plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live coming up.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. You can watch Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter/X feed at Gard Goldschmidt. You can also check out my Substack, the Garden Goldsmith Substack. And if you are so inclined, you can also check out my work for mrctv.org. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thank you again for believing in the principles of individual liberty. Now, the other portion of what the grand and vaunted Speaker of the House, that great conservative Christian, Mr. Johnson, is doing has to do with, yeah, you got it, my friends. It has to do with privacy and FISA. Yes, surveillance. Yeah, there's a little Steve Vai with John Lydon, of course, teaming up on the song called Fishing from the album Album.
Go crawl back in.
Yes, go crawl back into your dustbin, in the dustbin of history. Listen to Steve Vai here. Oh, man, Steve, way to go. So, again, little nice reference there with Steve Vai. Again, to remind people, don't forget, if you're interested in music coming up this fall, you're going to be able to see King Crimson. Not, of course, the original King Crimson with people like Greg Lake and so on involved, but the 80s version of King Crimson. But Steve Vai is going to be taking the place of Robert Fripp. So it's going to be Adrian Belew, Steve Vai. I think the drummer for Tool is going to be in there. So it's going to be wild. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Cannot wait. Okay, so let's start things off with this from Thomas Massie. Incredibly, the same congressman who just voted to give the FBI $200 million for a new building are arguing we can't possibly require warrants for domestic FISA searches because a few FISA judges would each need to have a special room, SCIF, built to handle the warrants. Now, Congressman Massie makes a good point there, but if you notice, he says who voted to give the $200 million for a new building require warrants for domestic FISA searches. There's a distinction there that does not belong there for a strict reading of the Constitution. When he says domestic FISA searches, that distinguishes it from spying on foreigners, which of course can then pull in Americans. Afterwards, the way they've constructed FISA from 1978 on. Thank you, Ted Kennedy, up there in heaven. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Ted Kennedy, wherever you are. And perhaps he, you know, asked forgiveness, who knows, for many of his crimes. But this distinction is false. It's a false dichotomy. There is no distinction between what the United States can do when it wants, or what any entity of government can do, any level of government can do when it wants, when agents of it want to search someone from the United States versus searching someone from another country. It has to do with the so-called powers that the founders claimed they had over people, and then people are supposed to follow that if they enter the halls of the U.S. government and assume that power over us. None of it is legitimate, but it's the set of rules that they promised to those people over whom they would lord. They'd say, well, we're going to lord over you, but we'll put some caveats over how we're going to lord over you. Oh, thank you, dear sir. That's so kind of you. Wait, is it really? Well, yes, I'm going to rule over you, but I'm promising you that the way I rule over you will be very, very kind. You mean you've written protections over how you're stealing my liberty? You got it. Okay. Is your middle name QED? Yes, it is. It is. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is just a false dichotomy. Now, there's another bit that I want to mention, which is not here, but it's a quick tangent about something that Thomas Massie posted yesterday. And I replied to it yesterday over on X. And now, Thomas Massie has an amendment in the for the Constitution that would say that the United States government cannot so-called regulate intrastate food growth or trade. Now, first of all, you don't need that. Okay. Second of all, just like you don't need states passing statutes about concealed carry or things like that. And we're going to get to a little good action from the states from the 10th Amendment Center to round off the show in a nice positive way that I think you'll like. Great work from the 10th Amendment Center. But he has this amendment proposal, and you'll see it on his X feed. You'll see it on my X feed, where he says that this proposal would prohibit the federal government from regulating so-called foods that's only traded within the states. Okay, well, there have been numerous Supreme Court cases where different judges have ruled on it in different ways. It's ridiculous. And of course, we're all at the mercy, as I said to the senator when I went to Channel 50, Mr. Bradley, we are at the mercy of congressional, judicial, or executive department whim. And that also applies to the states. If something happens on the state level, look at the gun statutes they're throwing out there. They're going to try to cost more and more for licensed firearms dealers. You shouldn't have to be licensed in any way whatsoever to engage in free trade with somebody. That's all. So they do it on state levels too, right? Until it gets appealed and, you know, they're hoping there'll be a different composition or that they can bankrupt certain people. They just want to cause hassles because they've got the power to government. But what Massey implicitly does is he tacitly then accepts the idea that the feds can regulate stuff that goes over state borders, which is not the way the original Interstate Commerce Clause in Article 1, Section 8 was written. That's not what it was for, as James Madison spelled out in a letter in the 1800s. He said, and I've mentioned it many times here, at least a couple times a month, we have to mention this because this is one of the ways, this is one of the levers that the feds get in and try to control everything that goes over state borders, whether it's radio telecommunications or it's food or it's cars going on the interstate, so-called highways, the CAFE standards, what you can manufacture. All those things, they always go under this umbrella of, well, it goes over state borders, so we can regulate it according to Article 1, Section 8 in the Commerce Clause. But as James Madison said, that is supposed to be a clause that was written to allow for some sort of restorative or some sort of corrective measure after states had conflicts with each other because of state policies. And if you look in the Constitution, you can see the word state is capitalized. So it's the corporate states having problems with themselves could then turn to the federal government, say if the states, and the original idea was supposed to be that rather than preempting action, the states, if they had conflict over things like tariffs, could then go to the federal government and get some sort of remedial measure to remedy the conflict. It wasn't supposed to be that the feds could regulate anything that went over state borders, right? That's absurd. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it blows the lid off of all the enumerated specific powers that are granted over certain things. And it destroys the concept of the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. It's utterly ridiculous. It's also a form of taking. It also applies penalties to people before the fact, a priori, saying you have to conform in this way, even though no one has been hurt. Well, that conflicts with the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, and the Eighth Amendment. So, you know, anybody with a logical mind, you know, if you're like I am, over the years, you probably have gotten very frustrated by seeing the way that they mishandle and abuse the Interstate Commerce Clause. I mean, it really is like an abused spouse, just over and over and over again. They're like, oh, I love you, Constitution. Boom, hit you again. Right. But it's not even that, because they actually use the Constitution as brass knuckles. It's the people. They say, well, we got the Constitution. Boom, hit you again. Oh, I thought you weren't going to hit me. No, I'm using the Constitution now as an excuse. See, I've got the power according to the Constitution. Yeah, but the Constitution also has some barriers in it. No, you don't understand. Did you hear that? What I just told you? I have the power. Oh, so the Constitution is just a beard? Yes. You're getting it now. Can I buy a razor? No, you can't. Especially if it comes from China, you might save a couple pennies. All right, so now let's get into this FISA stuff, okay? Section 702 of FISA. Now, if anybody thinks it's just Section 702 that is the problem, then ask them to, as XTC would say, wake up. Here it is, everybody. House Republicans confront fight over FISA reauthorization. Now, they are going to do it. They will do it. This guy wants it. And if you're just listening, that being House Speaker Mike Johnson, he wants it. This is CNN, so it's their phrasing. House lawmakers, I'm sure God appreciates that, are returning to Washington. I don't know. I can't speak for God. Are returning to Washington to a contentious issue this week, an effort to reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Now, nowhere in this piece, if you take the time to grow more gray hairs to read it, do they ever question its constitutionality or the fact that it completely is an affront to the Fourth Amendment? House Republicans, they say, have been fiercely divided over how to handle the issue, putting pressure on Speaker Mike Johnson to find a path forward. Ah, what a euphemism. Amid competing factions within his conference, with the threat of a vote on his ouster looming, the Louisiana Republicans' every move will be under even more intense scrutiny. The law as it stands allows the U.S. intelligence community, you know, that one that James Clapper admitted was maybe kind of, well, not knowingly. Yes, knowingly, Mr. Clapper. Yeah, you perjured yourself in front of Senator Wyden and no one bothered to do anything about it. You should be in prison for the rest of your life. The law as it stands allows the U.S. And of course, you're a war criminal, so maybe there are some other punishments that should have been allotted to you as well. The law as it stands allows the U.S. intelligence community, the statute, to collect the communications records of foreign persons based overseas. But it also allows the FBI to search the data it collects for Americans' information in what critics have called a backdoor search. Duh! It's a sweep. And the FISA court is unconstitutional because they're supposed to issue real warrants. The FISA court giving permission on spying on a foreigner is not permitted by the Fourth Amendment. A warrant is a publicly available document issued by a judge upon the judge's, and I don't even think that this goes far enough to protect my freedom, the judge's assessment as to whether or not there is reasonable suspicion. And then the person to be searched and the items sought must be made public. Now, going back a little bit to 4 days ago, this one comes from WGMB out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Went to the home state of that man, that grand Christian. Speaker Mike Johnson, what is it that they say not to covet? Well, when you want somebody else's information or you want somebody else's money, what are you doing? Speaker Johnson is pitching colleagues on the chamber's latest proposal to extend the nation's warrantless surveillance powers, expending more money. And of course, he's warning of urgent deadlines and the risk of Senate intervention. Reforming Intelligence and Surveillance Act, that is the name of the new one, the Reforming Intelligence and Surveillance Act unveiled Friday, would extend Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which allows the government. And of course, that was just a ruse after the Church Committee hearings. That's why Ted Kennedy was involved. It was all a show. The Church Committee hearings, some people had their hearts were in the right places. You know, I think Church maybe had his heart in the right place. But a lot of people did not. They knew exactly what it was. It was a show to give them permission later to actually write a statute to make legal all the things that the FBI was doing previously that were illegal and, of course, unconstitutional. So for good perspective on this, let's turn to my friend and a friend of liberty, James Bovard. Congress puts more nails in the constitutional coffin as it sets to renew FISA. This came out yesterday. Promising reforms is the easiest way to perpetuate abuses in Washington. For more than a decade, illegal federal surveillance scandals have rocked the nation. Unfortunately, the House of Representatives will likely vote this week to continue letting the feds secretly spy on American citizens for another 5 years. Whistleblower Edward Snowden revealed, and we go with the jump around, Jump around. Come on. Where are you? Looks like, it's the post. It's screwing things up here. It's going slow. Sorry about that. Let me take that off the screen so you don't have to see it all happening over and over again. Okay. Looks like I've got to reload this because this eats up the CPU. New York Post is super busy and it eats the CPU. So I'm glad that I'm actually still streaming to you. I should have remembered that and gone to his website or copied and pasted it into a Word doc. Edward Snowden revealed in 2013 that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act had unleashed federal agencies to snoop on anyone they pleased, including anyone searching the web for suspicious stuff. In 2016, a top FBI lawyer made false claims to the FISA court to launch turbocharged surveillance of a Trump campaign official, helping open the door to the Russiagate bogus scandal that rocked the Trump presidency. It was all fake. It was paid for by the Clinton, you know what, the Clinton campaign. Justice Department Inspector General reports have repeatedly exposed FISA violations since that time. A coalition of principled Republican and Democrat members of Congress vigorously pushed for ending the warrantless searches of Americans' data in December. The law, the statute, was temporarily extended, but it expires on April 19th. Under FISA Section 702, the National Security Agency vacuums up troves of information as part of its foreign surveillance. But vast amounts of Americans' personal data also are incidentally snared. Perpetual abuses have occurred when the FBI sifts through Americans' emails and other information without a search warrant. This is why Senator Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, quipped that FISA stands for Federal Investigators Stalking Americans. The speaker seemed to agree, just declaring in a Dear Colleague letter, "I can state unequivocally that the FBI terribly abused the FISA authority in recent years and in turn violated the trust and confidence of the American people." How about violated the Constitution? See, this is the problem. They will always allow for the door to be open, and he's going to keep his foot right there. Johnson, as James Bovard says, but Johnson has betrayed reformers and helped scuttle any attempt for meaningful limits on FISA spying on Americans. In lieu of requiring a search warrant, Johnson and the Deep State fan club on Capitol Hill are pushing the Reforming Intelligence and Securing America Act. So to wrap it up, everybody, here is what James Bovard offers as he looked at it. Proponents boast that the bill includes 56 reforms to protect Americans' rights. Some of the reforms, as they call them, should have made this bill a laughingstock. It requires the FBI to establish minimum accountability standards for employees. In other words, nothing. It requires FBI personnel who conduct 702 queries to undergo annual training. Awesome. Well, James Bovard writes, why didn't proponents add two more provisions, cross their T's and dot their I's, and claim the bill has 58 fixes for FISA instead of just 56? Capitol Hill is a surreal atmosphere where almost all prior government abuses vanish into mist when congressmen seek to perpetuate federal power. House Intelligence Committee Chair Mike Turner, Republican of Ohio, is relying on Orwellian caliber falsehoods to spur support for reauthorization. Quote, we are not spying on Americans. This is not a warrantless surveillance program. Seriously. On Sunday night, Turner told Politico, quote, FISA is about surveillance of foreigners abroad. The issues of Americans' privacy and data are unrelated to our spying on foreigners. So James Bovard writes, plus or minus 3,394,053. That's the number of Americans whose privacy was unjustifiably zapped by FBI warrantless searches using Section 702 in a single year per a 2020 federal report. Turner did not disclose what size broom he used to sweep 3+ million cases under the rug. FBI Chief Christopher Wray testified last month when, of course, he wasn't so busy investigating parents who went to school board meetings or Catholics who were praying the rosary. FBI Chief Christopher Wray testified last month that the Bureau's FISA reforms, quote, are working with a stratospheric rate of compliance, writes James Bovard. But the FBI admitted to conducting 278,000 illicit searches of Americans in 2020 and early 2021, the period covered by the FISA court ruling released last year. The FBI abused FISA to target people who notified the FBI of crimes, repairmen entering FBI facilities, and even chumps who volunteer for the FBI Citizens Academy program. House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan led the push to require the FBI to get a search warrant to pilfer through Americans' personal information. But the RISA pseudo-reform instead would merely, quote, require approval from an FBI lawyer for database searches about Americans. Bing! Survey says, number one answer, James Bovard. Yeah. Now let's get away from your privacy and talk about your freedom to travel. Oh, we've got a lot to discuss on that one, my friends. Yes, stay thirsty. I love that comment over at Rumble. I have to reload Rockfin here and see your comments, everybody. All right. Thank you very much. Yes. Okay. So we're going to go over into Rumble as well. Freakin' says backdoor search. Can say that again.
I want to be your backdoor man.
All right. Here we go. Here is a little something to change the pace, my friends. Talking about our travel freedom. Of course, you know, we're going to turn to regulations on cars and a follow-up on what I discussed last night, plus another little additional entry into the fight for travel freedom, thanks to Gary Newman. Gary, I can't wait. He's got to go into the red outfit. There he goes. That was awesome in the red outfit. Here we go. In my car.
Here in my car, I feel safest of all. I can lock on my doors. It's the only way to live in cars. Here in my car.
Yeah, baby, yeah. I didn't do the freeze frame. Oh, man. Yeah, whoa, there's another new freeze frame. I'm liking that one with the tambourine because it does come in at that part in the song. Good stuff from Gary Newman. Like I said, he's a pilot. He and his brother are pilots. They used to fly a bunch of World War II planes. They love the Mustangs, things like that. We'll be back with a lot more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember to listen and watch us on Liberty Conspiracy Live on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter/X, that being at Guard Goldsmith, every Monday through Friday, live at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks, fellow conspirator.
Free Talk Live.
This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. You can watch Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter/X feed at Guard Goldsmith. You can also check out my Substack, the Garden Goldsmith Substack. And if you are so inclined, you can also check out my work for mrctv.org. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thank you again for believing in the principles of individual liberty. Let me give you this one. Let me see. Where is it? Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Here's Forbes. This is from what year? Just up to 2023. Yeah, this is about a year ago. May 2023, with all the pop-ups and all the ridiculous stuff that keeps coming around here. Revenues build for charge enterprises as its EV charger business grows. Here it is. So now I could have done one of many, many stories like this, okay? But this is just absolutely going. They have the thing parked out in front of a Whole Foods, right? The charging car. And they've got Charge Enterprises doing their thing. And they were also going to get involved with telecommunications, right? There's the CEO. His name is Andrew Fox. He's the founder. Ah, what a wily, wily fox he is. The ink on Charge Enterprises' bottom line isn't yet black, but looking at the company's first quarter results, its founder and CEO, Andrew Fox, has every confidence it won't be long until they won't be in the red. Oh, okay. Remember I told you, I want to look into these guys. Now, I still haven't found whether or not they got federal grants, but I think they might have gotten some help from the California government. I've got to look into that a little more, but I'm about 75 to 80% sure. I got to do some more digging on this. It's a difficult and expensive proposition, but based on its latest financial results, the four-year-old company is closing in on becoming profitable. With Chief Financial Officer Leah Schweller stating in a release that she expects Charge to deliver a before-tax profit by the first quarter of 2024. You know, when they filed for bankruptcy. All right, way to go. This is Forbes. This is Forbes. They didn't even ask. Oh, man. Okay. So now let's go into this very good piece on Substack by Peabody Street Research. This was in 2022, a year before the Forbes piece. Unbelievable. Inside Charge Enterprises, an FBI sting operation, penny stock promotion, money laundering, and a plethora of fruitless ventures. That's what the Biden administration is pushing. Generally, it's that fraudulent. Specifically, I don't know whether they got federal help, but generally speaking, it's the same climate canard nonsense. Give us your money. We'll give you the snake oil. Dear readers, today we publish, this is 2022, right? This is June of 2022. Today we publish on Charge Enterprises, which was worth $900 million, according to NASDAQ. Whoops. The EV charging roll-up, which we believe is blatantly overvalued based on our extensive research. Below, we present a synopsis of our findings along with our report. I wonder why Forbes, now no longer in the hands of Steve Forbes, didn't check on this. You can download this story, by the way. Summary. Now, some of these things are a little bit too, I think, accusatory, but a lot of them really, the dart just hits. It hits perfectly, right above the bullseye. Charge Enterprises owns a portfolio of electric vehicle charging and telecom infrastructure businesses worth a market cap of roughly $900 million. Charge Enterprises claims to be building a network of electric vehicle infrastructure across North America. Records show they're building parking for Amazon vans. Our diligence reveals individuals associated with Charge appear to have a checkered history of alleged fraud, money laundering, and failed penny stock promotion. Our work unveils a transcript in which the CEO of Charge's predecessor company, GOIP Global, tries to bribe an undercover FBI agent in exchange for investment in GOIP. That was the predecessor company. Just dive in. The water's clean. Before entering the EV business, GOIP transitioned, hate that use of that term as a verb, from an energy tech business to growing cannabis. They told investors in 2019 that the company was acquiring a Kenyan cannabis license. The Kenyan government denied ever issuing them a license. We uncover that Charge's founder previously pled guilty to money laundering, declared bankruptcy in 2017, and was involved in alleged pump and dumps. We closely examined each of Charge's five acquisitions and found that they were doing last year and found and the year before and the year before that, because this is 2022. So they just continued doing more acquisitions. We closely examined each of Charge's five acquisitions and found striking problems with various transactions as outlined below. Charge's latest acquisition as of June 30th, 2022, EV Group Holdings LLC, has ties to an individual barred from the SEC due to purported fraudulent investment dealings in 2014 and later the primary recipient of alleged stolen investor funds. Charge's first foray into the EV space through the acquisition of Get Charged has been largely written off despite paying $28 million for it 2 years ago. So they wrote it off as a loss. Per our photographic evidence, Get Charged, that company we just mentioned, has removed its electric charging stations for e-scooters and e-bikes, even though it promised in 2019 that it was building out a network of 3,000 plus chargers. Whoops. The company has now resorted to renting out phone charger stations. Import records show these can be bought off Alibaba's retail website. These charging stations are predominantly located in Boost Mobile stores. Our research indicates they are unlikely to be used and often do not exist. Charge made their first acquisition, PTGI, for less than $1 million. We believed its revenue and razor-thin margins are quickly deteriorating. Ironically, 85%, akin to $451 million of Charge's annual revenue, comes from this low-calorie acquisition. This acquisition has allowed Charge to appear undervalued relative to EV peers from a revenue multiple standpoint. Based on these factors, we believe Charge Enterprises is overvalued and worth less than 15 cents per share, implying downside greater than 95%. That was almost 2 years ago. Okay, now, in my investigation, I want to show you something else that I found that I have never reported, and I'd like to mention it to you. This came out in October of 2023. I didn't know about it, and I feel obligated to give you this information. This comes from Power Engineering. It's an absolute puff piece, or if you're in the porn industry, a puffer piece. The day has arrived. Here are the recipients of $7 billion in federal hydrogen hub funding. Yeah. The Department of Energy made the highly anticipated announcement for the initiative, very highly anticipated, for the initiative aimed at scaling up clean hydrogen production, storage, delivery, and consumption in the U.S. Ah, there's one of those government computer-generated images. Everything's green and beautiful, coastline, everything's nice. The U.S. Department of Energy, and by the way, the source of this is the Department of Energy. That's where Power Engineering got its info. They just basically cut and paste. The Department of Energy on October 13th named 7 regional clean hydrogen hubs. Where are they for the $7 billion? Yeah, funded by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the 7 H2 hubs are located around the U.S., jobs, 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 and aim to jumpstart a national network of clean hydrogen producers, consumers, and connective infrastructure, you know, which could happen in real industry if people wanted to invest in it and they thought it was worthwhile. Wait, what? Yeah, because it's the future, future, future. So there's the first one, Appalachian Hydrogen Hub, or the Appalachian Regional Clean Hydrogen Hub. The Appalachian Hydrogen Hub includes West Virginia, Ohio, hi Rob Portman, glad you retired, Kentucky, hello Mitch, and you got it, Pennsylvania, and will leverage the region's access to natural gas to produce low-cost clean hydrogen. Well, how about we just use the natural gas? Oh, we can't. We can't. I forgot. I'm sorry, because it's somehow evil. And store the associated carbon emissions. Payoffs, 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 BlackRock, a process known as blue hydrogen. Is that like blue Hawaii? The ARCH2 hub includes a diverse group of partner companies, otherwise known as fascism, including Battelle, Air Liquide, the Chemours Company, French, CNX Resources Corporation, Dominion Energy Ohio, Empire Diversified Energy, EQT Corporation, Fidelis New Energy, a lot of political connections to the Midwest on that one, First Mode, Hoglick Aggregates, Hope Gas Incorporated, Smoke in the Hopium, Independence Hydrogen Incorporated, Key State Energy, MPLX, Plug Power, and TC Energy. They'll do anything they want. And I won't go into the details on some of the other ones. But, oh, look, it's California's the next one. And then you've got Gulf Coast. The Gulf Coast. Houston, Texas. Yes, the Gulf Coast. Awesome. And look, who's involved? Air Liquide, ExxonMobil, Mitsubishi, Chevron. All sorts of them. And the Heartland Hydrogen Hub. Oh, by the way, the one in Texas gets $1.2 billion. The one in California gets $1.2 billion. The one up in Appalachia gets $925 million of, you know, your children's money. And, of course, they want to stop natural gas, which is cheaper. And they don't have to play favorites with people. The companies can just do it. But no, they can't. No, they can't. Then the Mid-Atlantic Hydrogen Hub. Does this sort of sound like the Hunger Games? You know, they got the zones. Pennsylvania, again, doubling up. Delaware and New Jersey. Awesome. Air Liquide's right in there. That's great. Then the Midwest. That includes Illinois, Indiana. Thank you, Governor Pritzker. Indiana, Michigan, they're going to get $1 billion. And by the way, the Mid-Atlantic, $750 million. And then the Pacific Northwest. You know, not like they couldn't get oil in the Pacific Northwest or coal. Shh, quiet, quiet. The Pacific Northwest Hydrogen Hub includes Washington, Oregon, and Montana, and plans to produce clean hydrogen exclusively via electrolysis. All right. And you got a smooth skin face afterwards, too. And that's $1 billion. So it's $7 billion from, of course, the Department of Energy, which, as we know, has been awesome in giving, what was it, Proterra, tons of money, and then Proterra just filed for bankruptcy. All right. So let's go over to this one to round things off with my live readings and news and stuff like that. Get your opinions and then go with one final recorded piece from MRC TV that I got to do. John Miltimore writes this: EPA phase out of gas-powered cars has ominous historic echoes. The Biden administration last week rolled out new emissions regulations that the New York Times said will transform the American automobile market. In what the paper called one of the most significant climate regulations in the nation's history, otherwise known as gangland threats, the EPA, thank you, Richard Nixon, is mandating that a majority of new passenger vehicles sold in America be hybrids or EVs by 2032. Now, they're not directly mandating that. They're doing that by the CAFE standards. The Biden administration and defenders of the policy argue that the EPA's regulation is not a ban. So you'll just charge your car up at a coal power plant. Oh, no, you won't be able to do that either. How about a natural gas? No. You got to wait. We're going to have to invest a bunch into the hydrogen stuff and the so-called carbon capture stuff to go to a bunch of our friends in fascism, you know, the stakeholders. And you'll never be able to buy steak again because we're going to ban cattle as well. But as far as the homonym stakeholder, well, we're all set with those. You're not a stakeholder. No. And you're not even a holder of your own money. We claim all of it and your children's money. You're just slaves. You're cattle. You are the cattle. They're replacing the real cattle. You're the real cattle. The Biden administration and defenders of the policy argue that the EPA's so-called regulation is not a ban on gas-powered cars, since car makers aren't prohibited from producing gas-powered vehicles. Instead, automakers are required to meet a government-mandated average emissions limit across their entire vehicle line, the CAFE standard, to enforce them to produce more EVs and fewer gas-powered cars, to force them to. It's a clever ruse in that it allows the Biden administration to use so-called regulatory power to force automobile manufacturers off of gas-powered vehicles while denying that they're banning them. Whatever one chooses to call the regulation, its purpose is clear. Make no mistake, the Wall Street Journal noted, it is a coerced phase-out of gas-powered cars, otherwise known as central planning. Now, as I mentioned, if you read Rising Sun, you'll see at the back of Michael Crichton's novel, which he wrote, when was it, 1991, maybe 90, he thanked Al Gore for giving him the tips about how valuable it was for the Japanese to centrally plan their economy to produce computer chips. I mentioned this before, so sorry for the repeat if you're a regular viewer. But within about 8 to 10 years after the Japanese government embarked on subsidizing its chip its chip manufacturing industry, banking, of course, on the central planners' grand vision that that was the future for the economy, and they had to direct everything to it. Of course, people found out that it was really easy to manufacture chips. They were fairly cheap to manufacture, and that the actual value came in the content of the programs that went on to the chips. Now, there is capacity, of course, to try to come up with faster chips and so on and so forth. But at a certain point, the cost to value ratio is no longer there. You can produce them all over the place. People find out how to produce them. It's fairly easy. You can mass produce them easily. And the Japanese economy completely crashed. Same thing with the Chinese building all those buildings, you know, it employs a bunch of people. It's all central planning. Joe Biden getting engaged with the Taiwanese chip manufacturing, the $6 billion to open up plants here. That's just a gimme so we can get reelected and try to buy votes. That's what's going on. Everybody knows it. Roosevelt was a master of it. And read The Forgotten Man by Amity Schles if you want to get a very good education on that. It's terrific. And there's even a nonfiction, you might say, cartoon version, comic book version of it that's out there, of The Forgotten Man by Amity Schles. But of course, it's all central planning. And there have been many other instances in other countries where central planning has borne its evil fruits. And this is what Mr. Miltimore brings up. He says, a major reason why the White House is forcing this so-called transition of the American automobile market is that Americans aren't voluntarily adopting EVs quickly enough to satisfy the White House. Though Americans purchased more than a million EVs last year, that still represents less than 8% of total vehicle sales in the U.S. The government's current target is 56%. If the White House was serious about speeding up this transition, it might consider eliminating the 25% tariff on cars built in China, which accounts for some 60% of global EV sales, but that would be too easy. Despite massive subsidies encouraging consumers to purchase EVs, Americans didn't buy them as rapidly as predicted, causing auto companies to pump the brakes. Ford recently announced it was halving production of its most popular EV, the F-150 Lightning. And of course, they're even pushing that back now. General Motors, the largest U.S. automaker, and Toyota, the second largest U.S. automaker, followed suit, announcing significant reductions in EV production. The weak demand for electric vehicles no doubt has several sources, but the BBC identified a few primary reasons, two of which appear over and over in consumer surveys: price and charging reliability. Ford's F-150 Lightning starts at $50,000. And of course, Miltimore does note that it was a higher price previously, as we've discussed with Eric Peters. Its popular Mach-E, starts at $40,000, and that's after a recent $8,100 markdown. GM's top-selling EV, their Lyriq, starts at $59,000 on average. On average, EVs sell for about $5,000 more than similar gas-powered cars, and EV prices are going up, not down, researchers point out. And the cost is now more expensive than filling your tank for a comparable amount of miles to travel. The electricity is now more expensive than the gas. In 2011, the inflation-adjusted price of a new EV was near $44,000. By 2022, that price had risen to over $66,000, said Ashley Nunez, a senior research associate at Harvard Law School, in her testimony to Congress in 2023. This is where he starts to get into a few historical points about central planning. Forcing automobiles company to expand production of their least profitable product lines at the expense of their best performing ones is economic madness. It calls to mind collectivized agricultural policies in the Soviet Union, where central planners embraced the worst farming methods. While Stalin's collectivization of farms in 1929 was a massive failure that led to the deaths of millions, agriculture in the USSR, of course, continued during and after his lifetime. But two distinct sectors emerged: a tiny private sector that produced a bumper crop of food, and a massive collectivized sector that produced very little. The late economist James D. Gwartney, who lived between 1940 and 2024, explained that families living on collectives in the USSR were allowed to farm on small private plots, no more than 1 acre, and sell their produce at a mostly free, in a mostly free market. Historians point out that in the 1960s, these tiny private farms, which accounted for just 3% of the sown land in the USSR, produced 66% of its eggs, 64% of the potatoes, 43% of its vegetables, 40% of meat, and 39% of its milk. Now, folks, let me ask you a question. The eggs, the potatoes, the vegetables, the meat, the milk, are any of those not subject to direct attacks by the central government in Washington, D.C.? And have they not been subject to that for decades? The Soviet Union lives in Washington. We'll be back with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks for listening.
Free Talk Live.
This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find us Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rumble, Rockfin, and on my Twitter /X, Eastern Time. Share the links and join the conspiracy. Support freedom, one and all. Under the Fourth Amendment, every level of government, if any level of government, whatever agency wants to spy on someone, they can't spy on someone. They have to get a warrant, and it has to be a public warrant. And they have to cite the person they want to search and the item they're searching for. So, to leave a preposition dangling. And as I mentioned on Twitter /X today, it doesn't matter. People are like, well, those protect Americans. It's like, no, that is the way the government is supposed to operate for everybody. It doesn't have an asterisk next to it that says, except for foreigners. It's just, this is how you do it. That's the way it goes. And so it goes. So, let's go to some information from Howie Carr, as basically it broke this afternoon from Congress.
Here's the update on what just happened in the House. A group of House Republicans this afternoon tanked a procedural vote to begin debate on a bill to reauthorize the nation's warrantless surveillance powers. Warrantless surveillance. It means they could spy on you without going before court, and you don't, and you don't have the right to send in your lawyer. You don't have a Fourth Amendment right against illegal search and seizure, and you don't have a Sixth Amendment right against a Sixth Amendment right to confront your accuser. Other than that, it's only 2 out of the 10 amendments to the Bill of Rights that this thing. Abrogates.
Well, also it abrogates the Ninth Amendment, because the Ninth Amendment says only what is enumerated is to be considered a power. So yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But then again, you know, that was written by a bunch of people and you never were party to that agreement in the first place. So the entire superstructure of it is foist on you. It is tyranny. As I mentioned to someone, all forms of the polis are tyrannical. They are all tyranny, because the polis, by definition, applies itself and its rules to people who don't want to be part of it. If it was only a voluntary group, then, as you know, I'm an anarchist. If it were voluntary, it wouldn't be a political system. It wouldn't be a state. It would be a social agreement amongst consenting people. That's never the state, by definition, axiomatic. Howie's got some more, though. Here we go. There's more. We have a little bit about the economy and Joe Biden with Grace Curley coming in and giving the news. And then there's a very interesting one, and we'll touch on this in a slightly different form later in the show, talking about Israel. Remember how we showed yesterday Lloyd Austin? And he just, I see no evidence of genocide by the Israelis in Gaza. Really? Oh. Have you been struck blind, perhaps? Here is Howie, at least heading in that direction towards some of the information about Liz Warren. We've got two cuts here. I'll play this one for you about the economy and Joe Biden, of course.
There was another one I read. I didn't print it out. I think it was from Axios, but it said something about how inflation reigns on Biden's good news parade.
Ha! Yes, yes. What's that line? Stop, you know, stop peeing on my face or peeing on my back and calling it rain. Yeah. Yeah. The good news. Thank you, Axios. Yeah. There's always some way to spin it, right? Yeah. You know, this terrible economy is just making the good economy seem terrible. You know, this fist I keep using to hit you is making this fist I keep using to hit you seem like a fist that I keep using to hit you. Let's continue.
I didn't even click on it, but I was thinking, like, what does this parade consist of? What good news is he going on about?
Have you seen the video of him walking around with the Japanese prime minister today?
Yeah, with the sunglasses on.
And he can barely stand.
Yeah, I think we can barely stand him as well. So let's go to this next piece here. Here we go. Liz Warren related to Lloyd Austin.
Well, how about Elizabeth Warren the other day, Grace, by the way? It hasn't been in any of the, as far as I can see, it hasn't been in any of the Boston papers. She was at the Islamic Center or something in Boston on Monday.
Yeah.
And they asked her about genocide. Were the Israelis guilty of genocide? She said, well, she didn't know, but when they do the investigation, yeah, they'll probably be found guilty of genocide.
Okay. So it's a half and half. She's, you know, maybe she likes mocha or something like that. Half and half. I don't know what the deal is. But as the Scarecrow said, some people go both ways. So Lloyd Austin was a little more explicit about being a dunderhead mass murderer warmonger. He was a little more forward and out in front of the Senate when he was there yesterday. And he was asked, hey, are you seeing any signs? Because somebody got up and protested. So one of the senators gave Lloyd Austin an easy one and didn't actually follow it up. He wanted Lloyd Austin to basically say what he wanted to be heard, which was, oh, no, there's no signs of genocide. No. So you just got to make sure you don't watch any form of online alternative media with footage actually taken by the people committing the genocide in their pride and hubris. You don't have to talk to anybody who's been on the ground and visited that place and seen the babies being blown apart. You don't even have to look at any of the drone footage, seeing just vast square miles turned to absolute powder. You don't have to think about the starving people that are being starved by Israel and the United States. You don't have to think about the people shot at the food agency tents. You don't have to think about the people from the World Central Kitchen getting blown away by drone strikes in a very clear, directed drone strike against them. You don't have to think about any of those things, but the population being moved away, part of the genocide plan, about the open statements of Benjamin Netanyahu. You don't have to think about any of that. Just be like Lloyd Austin and make sure you know you got a good check coming from Raytheon. All right, Lloyd, way to go. Well, at least Liz Warren was only half that bad. We'll discuss that in more depth a little bit later. Let's get a little bit rowdy. R-O-W-D-Y. Yes, indeed, my friends. So as far as the FISA stuff goes, I just wanted to give you the word. A group of conservatives, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massie, and others, they got together, they fought it, and all it was, as Howie said, it was just a procedural move to sort of delay it and not put it out there for a vote right now. That's pretty much all that they can do. They're going to lose in the end because, of course, everybody else is so constitutional. They care such a flying you-know-what about the Fourth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment and the Ninth Amendment. They just make it up as they go. Again, if you were to walk into the Speaker's office and put your feet up, what would happen to you? I think we've seen what would happen to you on January 6th, didn't we? Yeah. So they seem to say that the offices that the Constitution creates are definitely solid and definitely written down and prescribed by the Constitution. But all the other stuff doesn't matter. As long as they get their salary and they can claim that they have power over you, you know, power created by people you never met, who was foisted on you by the Constitution. As long as they can use that as their beard, you're all set. Totally good. It rocks. It's excellent. Let's head to our second flash story, which actually is going to open up into a larger story. Here is the headline from our great team at Liberty Conspiracy. Meanwhile, Donald Trump speaks up for life, natural rights, and the Constitution. Well, now, I, it was one of my assistants who did that, obviously, so I'm going to have to talk about that. But I think my assistant got that right. I think so. Oh, wait, that's right. He added the second part. Nope. Spurred by an Arizona Supreme Court ruling, here's the story. Thank you, assistant person. You did exactly what I would have done. Thank you very much. That's super cool of you. I appreciate it very much. Okay, so let's give you the headline, and then we're going to show you some interesting stuff as far as video footage goes. We're going to go back and forth to the story. This comes from the Washington Examiner. Trump declares he would not sign national abortion ban, states that the Arizona Supreme Court abortion ruling went too far. Now, a lot of left-wingers are saying, Trump, you're the one who gave us all these terrible, evil, demonic Supreme Court justices that overturned Roe v. Wade, which made it national, and you sent it back to the states. Now you can't have it both ways there, Trump. Well, here's a little bit more to the story, my
friend. They're connected.
They do have a suspiciously large...
Thank you. Former President Donald Trump declared he would not sign, and this is part of it, this is what spurred this, the Arizona story spurred Trump to say that he would not sign a national abortion ban if the legislation were sent to his desk in a second term. Okay, so working backwards, let's look at what he had to say about the Arizona Supreme Court thing, and then we'll look in more depth at the learning experience this gives us looking at what Trump said about a national abortion ban. Okay, and again, like I said, he's halfway towards understanding the Constitution by saying it should go back to the states. Trump said about Arizona, yeah, they did it. Trump told reporters about the ruling issued in Arizona on Tuesday, prompting an impromptu press conference in Atlanta by him and his staff on Wednesday morning. It's all about states' rights. It'll be straightened out. I'm sure the governor and everybody else are going to bring it back within reason. So that's his stance. He doesn't want a national ban. He's on halfway towards states' rights. Okay, let's stop there. We're going to go back to the Arizona story, find out the details about the Arizona story. I've recorded some video about that for you. I want to present that to you. We'll give you those details about this 1864 statute in Arizona that the Supreme Court of Arizona found still applies. Okay. Now, what they didn't look at and what they didn't mention is going to be coming up mixed in with our analysis of what Donald Trump is missing here, and something that we don't have to miss because life is beautiful and we can absorb new information. So let me go over to what I've recorded for you. You saw a little clip of that in our preview on The Flash. So here it is.
It is a dark day in Arizona.
Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs blamed Republicans for the state Supreme Court ruling on an abortion ban for the case Planned Parenthood versus Mays.
And while it is currently stayed, we continue to live under an unacceptable ban, a law that still strips Arizonans of their personal autonomy and has no exceptions for women who are the victims of rape or incest, or any regard for pregnancy complications.
By executive order, Hobbs said she's removing the ability of county attorneys to prosecute women and doctors for performing abortions. The White House also reacting. In a statement, Biden called the decision dangerous.
So I want to start by addressing some devastating and alarming news from the Arizona Supreme Court. With today's decision, millions of Arizonians will soon face an even more extreme and dangerous abortion ban than they did before.
Even some Arizona Republicans, including Senate hopeful Carrie Lake, blasted the decision. Many pointed to the 15-week ban that former Governor Doug Ducey enacted while in office. On X, he wrote his decision was thoughtful conservative policy. According to the Washington Examiner's very own Tiana Lo Dosher, abortion may be the only matter that could impact Trump's current lead in the swing states.
There's a reason why Kamala Harris is racing to Arizona to capitalize on this. Look, a recent Wall Street Journal poll of all the swing states found that Trump has a double-digit lead across all the swing states when it comes to issues like inflation, the economy, foreign policy. The one area where Biden and Harris have maintained their lead is abortion.
Biden blames Trump for the decision. In his latest campaign video featuring a Texas woman who suffered a miscarriage and couldn't get an abortion as a result of her infection, potentially impacting her future efforts for pregnancy, the ad ends in saying Donald Trump did this. While some Republicans say they're against the decision, evangelicals against abortion praise it. Brent Leatherwood, the acting president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, said candidates who claim to have pro-life views need to articulate a vision for a culture of where babies are saved, mothers are served, and families are supported.
More lives are now protected today than yesterday. This morning's release of the Dobbs Supreme Court decision marks a true turning point for the pro-life movement. It is a turning point that we have continually prayed and advocated for.
Arizona's current law used to rule the state until 1973 when Roe versus Wade was enacted.
All right. So that's the Washington Examiner's coverage of that. And by the way, I really appreciate Inside Rockford and Brian Deb McCartney saying God evening all. I always love that. That's excellent stuff. And I do, of course, have some quibbles with the way that that was reported. You might have been a little confused by that, too. That story from the Biden administration, the Biden team, showing the woman who had a miscarriage, but then she couldn't get an abortion because of the infection. I don't understand that. There seems to be something missing from there. I don't understand. Was she carrying twins? I don't get it. Maybe there's something I just don't know. So I'm not going to speak on that. But one of the things on which I will speak, going back to this article from the Washington Examiner itself, is this. I want to go back to this. This is what the Biden Communications Director, Michael Taylor, said. As you saw at the end of that video, Donald Trump owns the suffering and chaos happening right now, including in Arizona, because he proudly overturned Roe, something he called an incredible thing and pretty amazing just today. Biden Communications Director Michael Taylor said, Trump lies constantly about everything. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's sure is good that you're saying that, because I know you're coming from a real honest place of honesty there. Ron Filipkowski writes, Trump brags about getting Roe overturned and says he disagrees with the Arizona abortion law and says that he expects voters in Arizona and Florida to overturn both laws in their states. We saw what Carrie Lake said. We saw what the former governor had to say about the 15-week thing. Let me ask you a quick question. Let's say you meet somebody and you decide, I want to take that person's life. Is it okay to decide and then take that person's life within 15 weeks of meeting that person? And then after 15 weeks, it's not okay. So now we're going to go back to Donald Trump and what he stated. This is an 1864 statute that even Katie Hobbs, the Democrat of Arizona, openly said she denounced the ruling and she called for the 1864 statute to be repealed. Well, what the Arizona Supreme Court is not discussing, and what Donald Trump is not discussing, what Joe Biden's team are not discussing, is that in addition to Roe versus Wade being overturned, being the right thing, right, the Dobbs decision, in addition to that, the fact that it goes back to the states isn't the end of the story. And this is the learning lesson that we can take with us to be reiterated. This is the intellectual ammunition we can take with us. And I've mentioned this before. It leaves it up to the states. So the definition of capital murder is supposed to be left up to the states. Hypothetically, within the confines of their state constitutions, you could have any state saying we're not going to have any laws about life, any statutes that punish people for taking the lives of other people. But if they do have statutes that punish people for taking the lives of other people, the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which wasn't part of the consideration here from the Arizona Supreme Court, and it's the other half of what Donald Trump is not mentioning, and it is clearly not on the radar of any of the people who are saying we have to do this. When Donald Trump says he doesn't want a national ban on abortion, he's not comporting with the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States already would require that states that have statutes that punish people for taking other human lives would have to equally protect all people, all human beings. This is why they try to term, well, the baby's not a person. That's how they try to get around the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment says that states shall provide the equal protection of their laws. So it just so happens that every state, of course, does have a statute punishing people for willfully taking the lives of other people, and in some cases, accidentally taking the lives of other people. You have manslaughter and things like that. So abortion is the taking of a human life. At conception, what is created? Created a human with distinct DNA, which is now no longer belonging to either the mother or the father. It is its own identity, DNA, and it is being. It is on that great arc from conception to demise called being, being there, like that Jerzy Kosinski novel, right? Chauncey Gardner's. Kid Collins used to call me Chauncey. So, now that's why she called me Chowder. It changed from Chauncey to Chowder. That's right. She used to call me Chowder as well. So anyway, so Donald Trump, in saying that he doesn't want a national ban on abortion, doesn't get it. Because the Constitution, all of those states, all 50 states, or if you want to include Ukraine and Israel, we'll get those out of it. We'll just stick with the original 50 states that we had a few years ago, right? So the 50 states that we've had for a little while now, every state has a statute that punishes people for taking lives of other people. 14th Amendment, if Donald Trump had a clue, tells people that the United States government would mandate that all those states, the 14th Amendment means that all those states must protect all humans equally based on their statutes. So fetuses get the protection as well because they are human beings. This is what's being missed here. The Arizona Supreme Court missed it. That's where they could have ruled. They could have said, look, you've got statutes that supposedly punish people for hurting other people and taking their lives. The 14th Amendment requires that we have equal protection under the law. Therefore, killing of a fetus is unconstitutional. It is illegal based on your statutes. Now, if you want to remove the statutes protecting other people outside the womb, go ahead, and then you don't have to worry about your abortion problem because now you don't have to equally apply the statutes because you've removed the statutes. But Donald Trump isn't talking about that. He is completely oblivious, unaware of the fact that the 14th Amendment already is a national abortion ban based on what the states themselves have in their own statute books. If they remove the statutes that punish people for harming other human beings and taking their lives, then they could allow for abortions. But they have to have some standards. The 14th Amendment requires that. And they don't have any standards. They want to pick and choose. And of course, this debate about, well, rape or incest or whatever, all that stuff is debate outside of what is actually pertinent here. Which is it a human life or is it not a human life? And is someone taking an action to kill it? All the other crimes, all the other things that are done, they have no bearing on the action that is being taken against another human being, period. You can't get around it. There's no logical way to get around it, no matter how many times people want to couch it. The only way that you might be able to couch it, I think, would be in self-defense. Again, if the life of the mother is in danger, truly in danger. Who determines that? I don't know. I think you'd have to leave that up to a jury. So, and again, I don't want to force my neighbor. And this is the anarchist argument here. Even though I understand that life begins at conception and it goes on that arc and that any human being interfering with that is taking the human life. Even though I understand that, I also don't want to interfere with my neighbor's life in many other ways. I don't want to force him to pay for the enforcement of what I think is the protection of other people. How much of that is enough? I don't know. Like someone said, if you're going to get the state involved in protecting people, how much protection is sufficient? You're going to have the cop cars going down your street once. Is that a threat? Do you feel safe? Or how about for fetuses, protecting them from mother's decisions? Where do you draw the line there? Another anarchist friend of mine said, yeah, guard, if we say that the state has a responsibility to protect the fetus from wrongdoing by the mother and that those statutes must apply if you're going to be harming someone else or taking the life of someone else or risking the life of someone else, just like raising children, where does the state step in? How about the fetus? He says you could get to the point where the state could dictate that the mother has to have 3 meals a day, take her vitamins, stop smoking, doing this, doing that. He goes, you can get into that sort of minutia for interhuman relationships that we would never do to each other in real life. But through the state, they'll do it because they say they're protecting people. And of course, the undergirding problem of that is that they're always assuming that they can take somebody's property in order to create this enforcement force. That's the underlying immoral predicate. You don't start there. And then you let voluntary people gather with each other and try to figure those things out. Thanks for listening to Free Talk Live and Liberty Conspiracy. Keep fighting for freedom, all. This is Gardner Goldsmith. Really appreciate you tuning in.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.